Welcome to another episode of the Friends with Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast, Team Preview Edition. I'm your host, Randy Haynes, joined as always by Colin Weatherwax. Colin, how's it going, man?
Doing good, Randy. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. Just ready to break down the ever-changing Seattle Mariners today with you.
Yeah, let's get it done today before anything happens again.
For the listeners at home, as always, these team previews are time sensitive for this time of year with the transactions that are happening, but it's especially sensitive with the Seattle Mariners and Jerry DePoto. We were looking at the roster resource page before we hopped on. It does kind of look like a Christmas tree with all the different colors that are lit up, the dark green and the light green. Dark green being guys they just recently acquired this offseason, big trades with the Mets, with the Yankees, the Brewers. So let's dive into it. Like I said, before anything else changes, behind the dish for them is Omar Narváez, who has been kind of sneaky productive over the last couple of years with the White Sox. Batting average 267, 277, 275, 3 years respectively. Walks a good bit. Fangraphs has him graded as at least the average to above average defensive catcher, so he should stick there. Where are you at on Omar Narváez? Is he like a really sneaky, dirt cheap catcher too that could end up being on your team all year? Or are you rather have somebody else you're targeting later, currently going as the 23rd catcher off the board over the last month? Where are you at on Omar Narváez?
He's a guy that you target in a two catcher league, but other than that, I don't see why you would target him. Getting rid of Mike Zunino, who was basically just a power first and last guy, for a more all around catcher. Like you said, he can take a walk, and he's pretty good behind the dish as well. So that being said, I think as a catcher number two in a 15 team league, he's a guy that's going to get a lot of starts behind the dish for them. But other than that, he's not someone I'm going out of my way to get.
Yeah, I do think in two catcher leagues, the nice thing about Narváez is he's shown that he's not going to be a drain on your batting average. He's even a plus in OBP leagues, like I mentioned. So it's somebody that's sneaky. You're not going to get any damage when you take Omar Narváez in your draft. But he's somebody that could help you out, especially with the state of catcher. At first base, it's looking like it could be Edwin Encarnacion. It could be Jay Bruce. We'll kind of talk about both of them. There's a chance, I'm sure, if the Mariners got the right trade offer, that either one of these guys would get dealt before the season started. Where are you at on Encarnacion and Bruce? Let's assume for now they stay with the Mariners to start the season.
I really like both of them. I think they're falling a little bit in early drafts, especially Jay Bruce. I mean, coming off of an injury-riddled year last year, another year older. He's almost 32 now. But I do like the situation that he's in. I like that he'll probably get every day at bats. And Edwin Encarnacion has just kind of been consistent for the past, 6 or 7 years. Last year was a little bit of a down year for him, but coming into this year, I'm fully confident in both of the guys, and you're not really having to pay a price tag for either this year.
Yeah, both guys are slowly trending in the wrong direction. Bruce missed, almost half the season last season with injuries. But before that, he put up 30-plus home runs, two straight seasons. Going to Seattle allow both of these guys, if they stay, to, rotate at DH and maybe keep their legs a little more fresh throughout the grind of the season. And the thing about Bruce, he's also going to have outfield eligibility. This is probably the first year, I guess, in a long time that Encarnacion isn't going as a top 10 first baseman on draft day. He's currently going around the 13th first baseman off the board over the last month or so in drafts, and Jay Bruce is all the way down at 29th among first basemen, probably going as if he's being drafted, as a corner, outfield, maybe utility, maybe even a bench bat. So Bruce is somebody especially that could be a nice late power stash. And if you're, picking either one of these guys or anybody in this Mariners team, really, there's a chance they're going to get traded. I do really like the price that Bruce is going at. Encarnacion is somebody that with the kind of first base is kind of weak as compared to the last several seasons, that's kind of starting to trend that direction. Encarnacion going 13th first base is probably the last guy that I'm comfortable with being my starting first baseman, even if his stats are kind of trending in the wrong direction with the strikeout rate ticking up. Hopefully if these guys get traded in the middle of the season, they get a park boost. When they get dealt, that would be pretty nice. But for now, they are who they are. The upside isn't really there anymore, but there's still a lot of nice cheap power here potentially, especially with Bruce. At second base is somebody that you and I have argued about argued over over the last year is Dee Gordon at second base. I'll take the L last year with Dee Gordon. I took him, I believe, in the second or third round of TGFBI, thinking the batting average would be there, the steals would be there, the runs scored would be there, hitting a top of a of what should have been a really good Seattle lineup, and was it for the most part of the season. But Gordon, just his plate skills, they cratered. They were never really good to begin with. But when you see a walk rate down as low as his was at 1.5%, is almost you almost think it's like a typo when you're looking on his Fangraphs page. But that's what cut in half from what the 3.6 that it was the year before. A 268 batting average, which was terrible. And the 30 steals helped you, but it wasn't the, 60 you were paying for from 2017, and then in 2015, still 58. So he really killed a lot of people in a lot of leagues. Not only, like I said, did I draft him early in TGFBI last year, but in a league where I was pretty loaded all around but was lacking in speed, I traded for Dee Gordon in the middle of June, and he really just kind of stopped running. His steals really, they really ticked down in the second half. I know you don't like Dee Gordon, but are you willing to take the discount this year coming into draft season?
No, there's a few guys that I'm liking the discount based off of a poor 2018, but Dee Gordon is not one of those guys. Right now he's projected to bat at the bottom of the lineup around spot number 8 or 9. He's another year older, which means most likely a little bit slower. Like you said, he's not going to provide 30 to 40 steals like he has in the past. And the bat, just like you said, it's not there anymore for some reason. I mean, he never was a big power guy, but he was more of a slap hitter. And, he had a few great years in LA where he, I think he won a batting title in LA, but it's just starting to deteriorate, like you said. And right now in NFBC, he's still going as a top 10 second baseman, and I can't get behind that. There's really still a price tag attached to him for a guy that really underperformed last year. He's going right ahead of Daniel Murphy and Rougned Odor and Robinson Cano, Brian Dozier. Those are all guys that I would take over Dee Gordon, no matter how many steals I'm expected from Dee Gordon.
Well, so the steals is the really scary part because, like I mentioned, I finally put up the numbers here. In the second half, he only stole 8 bases. In 22, he had 22 in the first half. That was even if he was, the walks weren't there and the batting average was a little lower in the first half. At least he was still running. In the second half, games played weren't there. He was starting to get more DNPs, and only 8 steals in the second half really cost some people their leagues. He's currently going outside the top 100, which he should be, but there's still going to be people taking the risk on the speed, thinking he could maybe have a bounce back. The walk rate was never good, but it's got to be higher than what it was last year. If he even gets back up to 4 or 5, maybe it turns into where you can at least break even on paying that price. I don't think I'm getting back in on Dee Gordon at pick 111, which is what he's been going at over the last month. But if that drops into like the 140s, I could see myself getting back on board. But it's don't think this is going to be the year for Dee Gordon either. Shortstop is a little interesting. Right now it's Tim Beckham or J.P. Crawford. Crawford was somebody that was acquired in the Jean Segura trade. Beckham played last year with Baltimore, was horrendous in the first half before turning around the second half. Crawford, somebody that as a former top prospect, has never really been able to hit at all in the major leagues. Is there one of these guys you like more than the other between Crawford and Beckham, or do you think this is a stay away since there's both of them?
Well, I mean, there's no price tag attached to either of them. I mean, they're going, almost pick 500, both of them. So, like you said, these are both of the guys are former top prospects. Tim Beckham, former number one overall pick, and J.P. Crawford was supposed to be the next young up-and-coming thing in Seattle, another first-round pick back in 2013. So, I think Crawford has the most upside out of the two. We kind of have seen what Tim Beckham can do. He showed a little bit of flash at the end of 2017 whenever he got traded to the Orioles, and I kind of jumped back in on him last year, regrettably. But coming into this year, I'm okay taking J.P. Crawford late in my best balls as a guy that should get me some playing time because he's a guy that can move all over the infield. He could play second, third, or short. So if there's an injury or if either Dee Gordon or Tim Beckham don't perform, then he can kind of slide into either of those spots. So I'm probably avoiding Tim Beckham this year, but I'll take a flyer on J.P. Crawford in a deeper league or a best ball.
Yeah, Crawford's the one I would take the flyer on. I mean, Beckham has these hot streaks, like we mentioned, you know, with basically his second half when he, like you said, when he was traded to Baltimore. He got things going a little bit later in the season after everything kind of fell apart for the Orioles, but it wasn't near what it was in the second half of 2017. And his problem, it always has been and probably always will be, is just his terrible plate approach. We're looking at a 29% strikeout rate in 2017, and that was his best season. He got that down to 25% last year, but he wasn't hitting the ball as hard. And I just don't, I just kind of think he is who he is. He's kind of trending towards a utility man, age 28, and we still really haven't seen the full breakout. So I'd take the chance on Crawford. Crawford at least has shown, even though he hasn't been able to hit consistently at the major league level, he has been able to at least take a walks in his brief time with the Phillies. But for now, it's probably a stay away. Just avoid him on draft day. Monitor the situation as the season starts. Maybe there could be value with one of these guys, but I would take a flyer on Crawford in a real deep league, or like you said, like a best baller draft and hold type situation. Kyle Seager still at third base. I think he might be the only guy that's never been rumored in a trade, or if he was, it just wasn't at the level of some of the other guys they've had over the past few seasons. Where are you at on Kyle Seager? He's kind of not really somebody anyone is excited about drafting anymore at this stage in his career. What do you think about Kyle Seager, age 31?
Yeah, you're never really excited to draft Kyle Seager, but going into a draft, if you know you find yourself pretty solid around the infield and you're looking for either a corner infield spot or someone that you know is a confident backup for your corner infield or maybe your third base spot, Kyle Seager's the guy. I mean, you pretty much know what you're going to get every year out of him. The batting average is not going to be great, but the power should be between 20 and 25 home runs, decent RBI and run total. So he's a guy that's going to give you, you know, pretty blah stats. But hey, I mean, if it helps you, you know, creep up that leaderboard for power or for RBIs and runs, then what else can you say? I mean, right now he's going as the 24th third baseman off the board, which is right after Miguel Sano, right ahead of Ian Happ, and I'm perfectly fine taking him right there at pick number 240. So he's a guy that you can plug in right at your corner, right in your third base, and you know, just kind of know what you're going to get, and it's pretty hard to do in this day and age in baseball.
Yeah, I'm fine with the price. I think if you take Kyle Seager, that you're always going to be looking to improve on that spot if he's your corner or your utility. Skills have declined each of the last two seasons. Walk rate has dropped. It was 10.2% in 2016. It's dropped down to 6% last year. The K rate is going in the wrong direction. In 2016, it was 16%. Then up to each of the last 2 years to 21.9 last year. WRC plus has plummeted 50 points total over the last two seasons. So I'm fine taking him as a corner, but I almost don't want to because it's one of those guys that you see the name and you're like, oh, I'm not gonna drop Kyle Seager, he'll be fine. But you're having guys like that, you're probably passing up some guys along the waiver wire that would end up being more beneficial or at least have a higher upside than Kyle Seager. So the price is fine. I don't think I'm gonna be taking him though for that reason, because I think you're just always gonna be looking to improve on him as the season goes along. Let's slide into the outfield where there's some pretty interesting names, and some of them have come over in trades this offseason. Big shocker there with the Mariners. Let's start at center. Malik Smith projected to lead off. He finally put it all together in Tampa last season, especially in the second half. Where are you at on Malik Smith in 2019?
Oh, I'm a sucker for Malik Smith. Coming into last year, I mean, he was a guy that I was targeting late on in drafts as my steals guy. I drafted him in the main event last year, and he kind of performed, like you said, with the steals. He put it all together. He didn't kill you in average, you know. And now he's going to be batting atop that lineup, which we've already discussed. You know, the veteran presences in Bruce, Encarnacion, Seager. The next guy probably that we'll talk about is Haniger. So, I mean, it's a pretty decent lineup after him, and that should lead to a lot of runs, probably some steals. You know, we've seen what D. Gordon can do there a couple of years ago, so they're not scared to run. But the problem is this year there's a price tag attached, and usually that makes me a little bit weary. Right now he's going as the 28th outfielder off the board, right outside of pick 100 overall. Sandwiched between Victor Robles and Michael Conforto. So it's a little bit of a high price to pay for steals. He's not a guy that's going to tank your average by any means, but that's really all that you're expecting from Malik Smith is steals. So I'll probably look for the next Malik Smith in my drafts. Just kind of some guy that I can get way later on in drafts, that could provide, some of Malik Smith's numbers from last year. The price is just a little bit too high for me this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's over the, in the last month of drafts, he's going about pick 95. It's a salty price to pay, but I can see a scenario where he does return that value just because, like you said, if he's sitting at the top of the lineup. And that's the one thing about this about the Mariners, if they keep a lot of these guys for the majority of the season or even half the season, this is a pretty deep lineup. We're not sure the direction that they're headed in, and I don't even think they know. But if they go into opening day with this lineup, it's a pretty decent lineup, and there's going to be some runs scored if he's sitting at the top. He walks just enough. The 296 average probably isn't going to repeat since it was fueled mainly by a 366 BABIP last season. But there's a definite scenario of 35 to 40 steals with him playing every day. And like we talked about, if he's hitting first, in front of Bruce, in front of Encarnacion, in front of Haniger, and a couple other guys that we're going to talk about here in this outfield, there could be a boatload of runs to be scored from Alex. So there's guy. The problem is the guys that are, like you mentioned, that are going around him, I like a lot of them more. Yeah, if you look at a little bit ahead with like Puig and Castellanos, like them more. Victor Robles, Conforto, Justin Upton, taking all those guys over Malik Smith. But it also, even at that point, it's still a little bit of team construction. If you don't have any speed by then, I could see taking a shot on Malik there, and I'd be okay with it. So yeah, Malik Smith is somebody that the price is high this year, but I could see there's definitely a scenario where he can return value there. Let's move into Mitch Haniger, somebody that finally was able to put it all together last year. And the thing with Haniger had always been the health. He was able to put it all together last year. And where are you at on Mitch Haniger coming into the season? He's 28 right now, coming off a career year, finally played 157 games. Where are you at on Mitch Haniger?
I love Mitch Haniger. I mean, I really like the approach of the plate. He's really a complete hitter. He hit 26 home runs last year, 285 average. He was very consistent throughout the year as well. I mean, he started off real hot, kind of cooled down a little bit, but not enough to, warrant benching or anything like that. He's just a guy that, kind of like Kyle Seager, you can plug in your lineup. I think you kind of know what you're going to get from him. I really believe in what he did last year, and I think that's what you can expect moving forward. Right now, Roster Resource has him projected to hit second in this lineup, so right after Malik Smith, right before either Jay Bruce or Edwin Encarnacion, however they want to configure that. But I really like that spot for him as well. I do think he's the most complete hitter on this team, so that's a really good spot for him. So for his draft price, right now he's the 22nd outfielder coming off the board, right in between Marcell Ozuna and Eddie Rosario. There's a few guys that I like a little bit more after him, like Yasiel Puig, Justin Upton, who you said, Michael Conforto or Joey Gallo. I'm probably going to end up with some shares of Mitch Haniger just because I really believe in what he showed last year. Like you said, as long as he stays healthy, he should be able to provide those numbers again.
Yeah, I think what we saw last year, that's the best Mitch Haniger. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a very good player. I don't think the ceiling is much higher than what he put up last season, 26 home runs, 8 steals, a 285 average. I do think that's going to be tough for him to repeat. But the OB, he showed last year that he can be also be an asset in OBP format. So I really like Haniger. I'm fine with taking his current draft price and just crossing my fingers for health because the guy's a very good player. And finally, like I said, it was really nice to see him put it all together last year and finally cash in for his fantasy owners. Someone who did not reward their fantasy owners last season and probably teams, but he's in a new spot right here. Recently, just traded over from the Brewers. That's Domingo Santana, still just 26. Feel like we've been talking about him for a while. We had the big breakout 2017. Did Domingo Santana, did he scare you off last year for his with his terrible 2018, or are you dipping back in this year?
I think I'm going to dip back in this year. Last year was a crazy year with the Brewers. I mean, they just kind of relegated him in the fourth outfield role, and he never really got off the bench as soon as they started making some more moves. So it was really disappointing because I was big on his breakout in 2017. I dove in last year head first, and that really hurt me in a few leagues. But coming into this year, I really like the situation. I don't see who on this roster could take over the outfield spot that he occupies for now. unless they want to experiment with Jay Bruce back in the outfield, which would be a mistake. But yeah, I really like this spot. It's a really good lineup, like we've said already. And he's a guy that's going right now as the 70th outfielder off the board. So he's going around the likes of Shin-Soo Chu, his teammate Jay Bruce. A little bit before him is Ian Happ, who has a little bit more upside. But, you know, I think we've seen probably the best year for Domingo Santana, and that was in 2017. Where he, he hit 30 home runs with a 278 average, but he's a guy that should be able to provide you 20 to 25 home runs, around a 260 average. And, I'm perfectly fine with paying that price, and hopefully, he has a big bounce back year this year.
Yeah. Like I said, it can't get any worse than it did last year. And I think he was just kind of somebody in that outfield was always going to get this, or on that team was always going to get the shaft, which is the amount of guys they had. But he was kind of just doomed from the start. He seemed like he just never was in a rhythm from not playing every day. And that, we'd like to think the guys are just ready whenever, but they're human beings. And it's something that they was obviously messing with him, I believe. And, coming into Seattle, he'll be able to play every day. And the one thing I didn't mention with this team is, as a whole, is Seattle ran a good bit last year. Even with a couple of guys on their team, like a Nelson Cruz that didn't run at all, they were still in the top half of the American League in stolen bases. And I think it'll help out with a lot of these guys that are able to chip in. I'm trying to pull up just real quick and see what Santana's draft price is since the trade. Just give me one second, folks. Let's see. Since the 10th, there's only been a couple of drafts completed since then. But Santana's going at 270, and that may not have even been baked in with the trade yet, depending on when the draft started. So it's still kind of early to see what his new price is going to be now that we know there's going to be everyday playing time. But I think it's somebody that I could see it creeping up at around pick maybe 175 to 200. And I want to end up with a share or two of Santana just in case, just to see if all he needs to do is just have a set role, have everyday playing time, kind of know where his next at-bats are coming from, get in that routine. Because he's a really nice fantasy asset. Like I said, 2017, 30 home runs, 15 steals, hit 278, was a 371 MVP, which was nice. So I want to see Domingo Santana succeed, and I'm going to grab a couple of shares this season. Anybody else on this Mariners lineup that you want to talk about? Ryan Healy looks like he is right now going to be a short side platoon guy, maybe with Jay Bruce at DH. If Edwin Encarnacion were to get traded, depending on what the return would be, then Healy could all of a sudden end up with everyday playing time at first base. But I kind of think we know who Ryan Healy is at this point.
Yeah, I'm a little interested in Ryan Healy. I mean, his past 2 years have been pretty similar, 24 and 25 home runs, 73 and 78 RBIs the past 2 years. The big difference is in 2017, he hit 271. Last year, he hit 235. So that's a pretty big difference, and it'll be completely different for your projections if you're drafting him for a power guy, and this is a guy that's going to provide 230 as opposed to 270. But like you said, the situation isn't really there for him now. He could be a piece that gets traded. I mean, DePoto isn't really against trading right now. So I think the smart thing is for him to stay on their bench, and if Bruce or Encarnacion were to get hurt, or maybe even Seager as well, he's a guy that can play first or third, and you have a lot worse options coming off the bench than Ryan Healy. So I'm okay with taking him at the end of my draft as a guy, especially in a best ball where if one of those guys gets hurt, then he'll give you something.
Yeah, and he's somebody that once the season starts, if he is on the bench, keep on your watch list, because or Encarnacion or any couple of the other guys were to get traded, he can end up being a hot waiver wire pickup. So let's move over to the starting rotation and the big offseason acquisition for the Mariners pitching-wise. As Yusei Kikuchi signed on New Year's Eve, and I was pulling up his draft price real quick just since he's joined the Mariners, and I cannot seem to find it. Is he not in NFBC? Or is that something that I'm just completely missing and now I sound like an idiot?
You know what? I can't find him either. So, they might not have that updated yet.
Yeah, especially, I guess it's possible he hasn't, because he hasn't joined. So I guess he probably isn't in the draft yet. So I apologize for that at home, folks. But anyway, Kikuchi coming into drafts. He's kind of, I've heard some Patrick Corbin comps have been thrown around, pre-breakout Patrick Corbin. A little bit of Kenta Maeda from the left side. Both guys are very useful pitchers, but it's nothing that I think I'm going to be moving way up my draft board. It seems like Kikuchi's kind of like an SP3, SP4. Where are you at on Kikuchi coming in? I mean, FanGraphs doesn't even have him in their system yet, so there's no steamer projections for us to really go on. Do you have an opinion on Kikuchi one way or the other yet?
Yeah, so you know, I think whenever the signing happened, I looked up his stats over in Japan, and he was pretty dominant a couple of years ago. He had over 200 strikeouts and 160 innings pitch. And then last year, it was more of a nine K per nine. So it wasn't as good, but you know, still decent. And this is a guy that's going to be their SP1 going into the season. The only thing is I think they're going to relegate his innings pitched down a little bit. I think they're going to try and keep him in the 160 to 180 range as long as he's healthy. In this day and age in starting pitching, that's really not that bad. But like you said, he's probably going to be a SP3 or SP4 for you on your fantasy team. Once he gets a price established on NFBC, I know he has a price established on Fantrax, but some of those are skewed with you know, just the Trax 10s and people getting auto-picked and stuff like that. But that's why we use the NFBC ADP. But he's a guy that, you know, I would be perfectly fine taking as my SP3 or SP4. And I'll end up with at least one share of him just so that way I can hopefully reap the benefits of a good year.
Yeah, I did find Kikuchi actually in NFBC. The reason why I find him the first time is because he's still listed as a free agent. So as the listeners at home probably already had an idea, I am an idiot. But I did find Kikuchi. In the last month, he's currently going around pick 165, and that the most of those drafts have happened since he signed. So that's a pretty decent price. I think, like I said, I actually know that I already have a share in a draft and hold scenario. So I don't know how many more I'm going to be eager to grab. He's somebody I really want to wait and read a few more reviews and see some real projections on before I dive in. But I think he's somebody that, since it's his first year coming over, even if he is that kind of Kenta Maeda type where he's a nice mid-rotation guy. Just from the first couple times around the league before they can get a book on him, I think there could be some real success for him, especially in the first half. So I think I might be willing to take him a little ahead of his ADP just for that. So pick 165, does that kind of change your thought on Kikuchi at all, or is that about where you were thinking about having him anyway?
No, yeah, that's about where I thought he would be. The guy going right ahead of him sticks out, and Shane Bieber, he's a guy that I've ended up, I think, in all of my best balls. But, you know, I kind of like the price point right there. It's a perfect price point for a SP3. Probably not a SP4, but, yeah, I'm perfectly fine with taking him there. And like you said, I want to end up with at least one share.
Yeah, cool. So like I said, I would think you would know that. I mean, Mr. Main Event winner, you would know that Gucci still hadn't been placed on the Mariners in NFBC, right?
I haven't started my research for the Main Event yet, so that's probably why.
Yeah, we can't rush the greatness, right?
The 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits Draft Guide, the Fantasy Benefit, is the largest and most complete fantasy draft guide on the market, with featured writers from Friends of Fantasy Benefits, Baseball HQ, Baseball Prospectus, and Fangraphs, and many more. You will get tons of information on how to start your own league, draft strategies for roto, points, categories, NFBC, best ball, and DFS. There are tiers for every position, and 30 team previews, including 30 team prospect previews, breaking down the top prospects from each team. There are ranks for every position, for prospects, for first-year player drafts. This is the most in-depth guide that fantasy baseball has to offer. And not only that, we'll be updating it all draft season in the ebook and PDF. You can get this on Amazon.com in ebook form for $7.50 or in paperback for $13.99. Don't want an ebook? Don't want a paperback? Just want a PDF? You can order it by emailing friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com, and I will send you an updated copy every week until the start of opening day. Get your 2019 Friends of Fantasy Benefits draft guide called The Fantasy Benefit today.
All right, so let's move on to Marco Gonzalez, somebody that broke out a little bit last year, had a really nice first half, had a really hot run, I feel like, over most of the summer. Somebody that the peripherals really didn't show, though, that he was going to, you know, keep up what he was doing, and it caught up to him at the end. Finished with a 4-flat ERA, you know, decent Ks, but nothing great. What was really nice to see for Gonzalez was he kept the walks under control, a 4.7 walk rate last season, which I think is where really kind of establishes a pretty nice floor for Gonzalez. Is that where you are with him? Is he a step below Kikuchi? Maybe is like an SP5, SP6 for the season?
Yeah, he's probably SP5 for me. Going into last year, I made sure to get a few shares of him just because, you know, coming over from St. Louis, I really liked the talent, and I thought that he could really produce in Seattle. So that kind of worked out. Like you said, the first half was a lot better than the second half. But he's a guy that still provided you innings, provided you performance, strikeouts here and there. So coming into this year, he's, you know, SP, well, not really SP because NFBC doesn't do, you know, SP rankings compared to relief pitcher, but he's the 105th pitcher coming off the board, sandwiched between Kyle Gibson and Carlos Rodon. I kind of like that range. You know, those are three guys that have a little bit of upside, but you also kind of know what you're going to get as long as they're healthy, especially with Rodon. But yeah, I really like going into this season and getting him as, you know, my SP5 or SP6. And he's a guy that could be easily forgotten on draft day. So you might be able to get him at SP6 or 7 price. So yeah, I really like Marco Gonzalez, and I'll end up with him in a few best balls and possibly the main event scene.
Yeah, I mean, Gonzalez is somebody, you know, he did really well, like we said in the first half. Kept it going into July, gave it all back in August, and 20 innings in August, had an ERA over 10. Was able to bring it back down in September, though, to finish things off. So he's somebody that, because he's in the zone like he is and a lot like he is and keeps the walkers under control, he's going to run hot and cold. He's a guy that you don't want to – if somebody that you're drafting, you don't want to think of as a matchup play, but he's somebody that you might maybe want to just keep pitching at home and against and away from the real right-handed heavy lineups. But I still like Gonzalez, like I said. He's really established himself with a pretty nice floor, assuming all his past health issues are behind him. The rest of this rotation is just, it's not pretty. I mean, Mike Leake is who he is. He's going to eat up innings. He's a nice to have in an AL only. He's going to have a hot 2 or 3 week stretch where he gets picked up on your Sunday night fab runs. But outside of that, I have no interest in drafting Mike Leake. And even when he gets on these hot stretches, I usually don't even find myself trying to bid on him all that much, unless I'm just completely desperate for starting pitching, because I know eventually the bottom's going to fall out and he's going to turn back into Mike Leake. Is that kind of where you're at with Mike Leake?
Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at on the rest of this rotation. Like you said, Mike Leake is a guy that you might be able to pick up for a spot start here and there. Felix Hernandez, me and you were both really down on him last year for good reason, and I don't see another reason for me to dip back in the water. He's another year older, and what he showed last year was very concerning. He's a guy that might be relegated to like a bullpen role moving forward. And then the last guy would be Wade LeBlanc for their, you know, scheduled projected rotation. Another guy that's older, had a pretty decent year last year. He was probably SP4, which is really strange whenever you listen to that. Wade LeBlanc, SP4 most of the year. But, you know, these guys are guys that you'll probably pick up on FAB for 2 start weeks. They're a guy that, you know, you might be able to confidently put him in for about 150 innings, except for Felix Hernandez, who has the injury bug. But, you know, Mike Leake and Wade LeBlanc, you can put him down for 150 innings, you know, almost 30 starts. So those are, they have some value in best balls, especially whenever injuries happen and stuff like that.
Yeah. Guys, do not draft Felix Hernandez. I say guys, we're mainly talking to our buddy Mike the Rotocop. Don't do it yourself again this year. It's over. We can put Felix out to pasture now. But there is somebody that's not projected to be in the rotation, but could be kind of interesting as the season goes along if you already get an opportunity. Justice Sheffield was the big prize in the James Paxton trade, but there's no real reason for the Mariners to rush him if they are rebuilding, which it kind of feels like they are, but you look at their lineup and it's like, oh, maybe they're not, but they probably are. I think they keep Sheffield down for at least the first couple months of the season, maybe even into late summer. Is that kind of where you're at with Justice Sheffield? Is he on your redraft radar at all?
He's actually on my redraft radar. I could see, you know, a possibility that he's up by the beginning of May, maybe mid-April as well. And just looking at the top three possible rotation starters, I mean, you're talking about Kikuchi, Sheffield and Gonzalez, those are three left-handed pitchers. You don't really see that too often in the MLB right now. So I really am kind of high on Justice Sheffield. I've ended up with him. I actually ended up with him a lot before the trade in a few of my best balls. But now that he got traded to Seattle, I actually feel a little bit more confident because the Yankees would have been in the pennant chase. And if Sheffield would have performed really badly, they would have just sent him back down. But now I think he has the opportunity to, you know, if one of these guys gets hurt, cough, cough, Felix Hernandez, he could actually just slide right in and give you maybe 120 innings. And, you know, I really like the stuff from Sheffield that I've seen, really high K guy. And he's a guy, you know, going late in drafts that has a little bit of upside. So I'm taking a flyer on him in a few drafts.
Yeah, fair enough. He's somebody, again, once the season starts, keep an eye on him, see how things are going with Seattle. But don't – a last pick is about all he should be for – at least as for right now, unless something happens to one of these other guys. As far as the bullpen goes, it's a complete and total mess. Right now it looks like Anthony Swarzak is going to be the Mariners' closer. But, again, is he even on the team come opening day? Swarzak isn't even somebody that – I really even like skills wise all that much. I mean, 2017 was really nice, but he's pretty much been terrible for the rest, you know, for the majority of his career, you know, outside of that 2017 season. As far as that, somebody that you're interested if he is the closer for the Mariners to start the season, because they're gonna, I would imagine they would flip him for the first offer they get if he does have a nice little hot stretch. Is Swarzak somebody that could be a nice late steal for people that are desperate for saves?
I think you could take a flyer on him late in drafts. You know, I agree with you that he might, you know, just get flipped for the first offer that they get. So, yeah, I mean, going late in drafts right now, he's going off the board at pick 455. There's really no price tag attached to him, but it is a closer. There's a lot of sleeper closers that I like a little bit more than him going in that range or after. So that being said, you know, the one sleeper candidate I might have for this closing job might just be Felix Hernandez. And Mike, if you're listening, just turn it off now. but yeah, I mean, if he can't be healthy, if he can't get through, you know, four or five innings without getting lit up, I think that might be the best spot for him. And that's another thing that I'm thinking about with these older injury prone pitchers is why not just relegate him to a closer role?
Yeah, I hadn't even thought about Felix as a closer. I think that might be the best way to actually, you know, put some life back into him and kind of make the fan base feel a little better about the current state of things. Because, you know, as a Mariners fan, not only are you tearing this down, you haven't made the playoffs in however long, over a decade, and now the best player of your franchise history for the century at least is a, you know, a shell of his former self and still making a boatload of money. So that's actually kind of interesting. I hadn't thought about that before. That's something I'm going to – maybe we can root for as the season goes along, is Felix the closer. But outside of Swarzak, the other issue is there really isn't a lot interesting in this bullpen. I mean, Corey Guerin, we kind of know what he is. He's going to turn 33 this year. Nothing really special there. I guess if I had to pick a guy, Sean Armstrong's got some K upside. His command's been all over the place throughout his – stints in the majors and the minors. I guess he'd be the guy that if you want to try to get a piece of the Mariners bullpen in a draft and hold, or somebody to throw on your watch list once the season starts, I guess he's the guy. But there's really nothing else in this bullpen that I like as potential saves. How about you?
No, there's really nothing. I mean, the only guy that actually kind of sticks out is Sam Tuivasa, but he tore his Achilles, so he's out through at least May of 2019. He's a 26-year-old, showed a little bit last year, but nothing too crazy, but at least he's young and controllable. So if I had to, maybe in a best ball last pick, but I'll probably just stray away from this bullpen.
Yep, that's pretty much the 2019 Mariners. We don't know what to do with any of them, and it sounds like they don't know what to do with many other players either.
Yeah, this podcast might not mean anything coming out tomorrow. Because half the team might be traded away, but hey, I mean, like we've said in the podcast, you know, the offense is there, the starting pitching is it's kind of there, but not really, and then the bullpen is just atrocious.
Yep. All right, so for Randy Haynes signing off, for Colin Weatherwax, you can follow us on Twitter at RTH222 and at CWeatherwax13. Thanks, everyone, for listening.